All right. Just going to speak to you for a few minutes about the reading that we had from the book of Ruth. And as was appropriately commented on, there's a lot more, there's a lot more to it than that. We kind of got the, end of the story, but that was quite right. It's a beautiful little short story. And I would encourage people to read it to get the whole thing. Won't take very long, but it really is kind of a gem. So theme of All Saints Day, how God is at work in the lives of ordinary people. So we have an example of this in the book of Ruth. But I just want to start off with something that happened to me sometime ago. And that is, I got a call from someone who I hadn't seen for quite a long time. I'd known them for a long time. I'd known their family for a long time. And it's one of these cases where a lot had been happening in the person's life. They kind of fell between the cracks in the church a little bit. But if there was ever anything really serious going on, they would call the priest. So I got kind of an unexpected call from this person, and again, who I knew very well, and who I'd spent lots of time with her and her family, often under kind of difficult circumstances. And she sort of explained to me what was going on in her life, and then she said to me, "I wonder if you would walk through this particular event with me and my family." Obviously, I can't, not going to provide the details, but she said, "Would you walk through this event with me and my family?" And so I'm going, yeah, I've known you for a long time, and I care about you. Of course I'll walk through this with you and your family. And then I went away and prayed about it. And my prayer was this: Lord, do not make me go there. Do not make me go through this. I mean, find a way to stop this from happening, so that none of us have to go this, and so that I don't have to go through this experience with this person. And it's not because I didn't love and care about this family, which I did very much. And it's not because I have not been through my share of walking with people through traumatic experiences over the last 40 years. I'm thinking of Bishop Derek right now. I'm going, yeah, that's happened once or twice, hasn't it? Yeah, over the course of 40 years, however long it's been, happens once or twice. And even the Reverend Joan, in your time as being a priest and deacon, you're called to walk with people through traumatic experiences, and are happy and are honored to do so. It wasn't that a lack of experience. It was, well, there's a thing a priest says from time to time, which is, don't worry, I've seen everything. And just when you say that, you encounter something that you have not seen before. And this event, this particular experience that she was inviting me to walk through with her family, was just a new level of terrible, I have to say. And so I prayed. And I prayed, Lord, could you, I think this has been said before, Lord, could you take this cup away from me? I think is basically what I was asking. I'm going, this is too much. I don't know whether I will be able to abide this or not. The suffering here is so deep. I don't know whether I can do it, or whether I can be there. The other prayer, which I offered more of a kind of a whisper, was, and if you do make me go through this, would you please give me the grace to be able to do so? He did not answer the first prayer, but he did answer the second prayer. So I should have thought of this. The reason I think of this is because I should have thought of the book of Ruth while I was encountering this particular opportunity. We'll put it that way. I love Ruth. It's a beautiful little book, as I said. short stories in the Bible. And it's set, the way it's set is very important because it's set in the middle of a bunch of epic stuff that's happening to Israel. So imagine you're watching, I don't know, Lord of the Rings or something, and then all of a sudden it just stops and you're going, and here's the lives of ordinary hobbits. Just here we go. This is what's going on. It's kind of like that. This is set in a scene of just completely the disintegration of Israel, of civil war and famine and hopelessness. And we see how one family, like a microcosm of one family, and how it deals with all this violence and chaos that's going on. So it starts with the story. If you go back and read it, story, it starts with hopelessness. It's trauma, famine, sudden unexpected death, not only of Naomi, the mother-in-law, the mother-in-law's husband, but also of the two sons-in-law, of their unexpected deaths, of displacement, of being a stranger in a strange land. And so the setting is, you would look at this setting and say, there's not going to be a much of a story here because there's absolutely no possibility for hope and change in the story. That's kind of how it starts. And then it implicitly asks some questions right at the start of the story. And some of them come through the mouth of Naomi, the mother-in-law. And the questions are this, that it presents to us. How can ordinary people face such extreme circumstances with faith? How is that possible? Where is God? And you'll notice in Book of Ruth, God does not speak, at least directly. Where is God? What does it mean to be faithful when you can't see the way? It's relatively faithful when you can see the way forward. What does it mean to be faithful when you cannot see the way and when it is not apparent what the right thing to do is in order to be faithful? So here's why I might have thought, of Ruth in retrospect as I was being faced, as I was being offered this opportunity to travel with this particular family back in the day. And it's this. Ruth is a widow and a foreigner. She's in the same situation as everyone else of desperation and these desperate questions. She binds herself to follow her mother-in-law, Naomi, who is, and somebody pointed this out when we were studying it, is, you wonder, what are you doing? Why are you binding yourself to this woman? She is bitter. She is full of anger. She is hopeless. She's angry at God. And she is going into a completely unexpected future. But her foreign daughter-in-law, which means she has no obligation to Israel, her former foreign daughter-in-law binds herself to her. You wonder, why are you doing that? And the answer is only one thing. And that is complete and unambiguous loyalty. So we have words for this in the Old Testament. We talk about the Hebrew word is hesed, which is covenant love. And we talk about the importance of covenant, which is God's unbending commitment to us and our unbending commitment to God and relationships with each other, which have the really almost unbreakable commitment. And so the only possible reason she could be following Ruth is not because things are going to turn out well, or not because this looks like a great opportunity, but because she has this unbreakable covenant love with her mother-in-law. And of course, I suspect a lot of you know this little poem in the Book of Ruth, which kind of summarizes Ruth's attitude towards her mother-in-law, this bitter, angry mother-in-law that she's following for good reason, that, that she's following. I suspect you could repeat along with me. She says, Naomi says, go away, go back to your home, blah, blah, blah. And Ruth says, no, I'm sticking with you. And she said, then she says, wherever you will go, I will go. Wherever you will stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. It's so, it should, that should, that sounds familiar with us because we've heard it so often, but it should also sound familiar with us because it also, Jesus himself is the covenant and he fulfills both sides of the covenant. As God, Jesus says to us, wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you stay, I will stay. You will be my people and I will be your God, no matter what, how bad the circumstances or even how bad your behavior. And as a human being, the perfect human being, Jesus says to the Father, again, wherever you will go, I will go. You will stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and their God, my God. And this perfect, both fulfilling of the commitment from both sides. Jesus as the perfect obedient human being. So as we see it by bit to this story, as we come to the end of it, the family is restored, is kind of reconstituted, or we could even say restored despite the impossibility of the circumstances. And the thing that lays the foundation for the possibility of restoration from the very beginning is this. It is Ruth's unfailing covenant and commitment to her mother-in-law and eventually to the God of Israel himself. Whether you go, I will go. You stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. It's kind of like, it's like, I'm going to throw myself in the deep end here. And I, with just absolute trust and commitment, you're in the deep end. So I'm going to throw myself in the deep end too, without any kind of outward appearances. So back to the original story, which I'd mentioned to you, the situation, which I kind of found, honestly, doesn't happen. It happens very rarely, which I thought to myself, this is so traumatic. I don't know if I can enter into it. Please take this away from me. So I had two moments in particular when the prayer to avoid the whole situation was not answered, but the prayer for grace was answered. These are just two little anecdotes that I'll share with you. The first was when I was praying with the woman in question, and we were praying for strength and for protection, which was very much needed in this situation. And exactly the same image came into our minds at the same time while we were praying. I said to her, I guess that's some kind of confirmation, which it was. And the other is this. I heard the fastest confession I've ever heard in my life in a public place. Somebody comes up to me, family member comes up to me, says to me, you know, I don't like this. That I won't go into the details, obviously. I don't like the way I responded to this very traumatic situation. And I said to them, well, it's understandable. You know, you want to reassure people, right? That's understandable, blah, blah, blah. And she goes, no, I'm telling you, I don't like the responding. That's understandable. She's like, I don't like the way I responded to this situation. And then it was like this. almost involuntarily, I reached out my hand, put it on her shoulders. I don't know why I did it like this, put two fingers on her shoulder. And I said to her, "You're forgiven." I've heard lots of confessions in my time, but never one like that in a public place, so clear. And a confession which was not formal in the formal sense, but it almost felt like time stood still for a second. And again, it was almost involuntary, as if the confession, as if the absolution was flowing for me, just for half a minute. So there are very few answers as to why, although people have written books on it, on why bad things happen to good people, or even very traumatic things happen to good people. But one thing we can see throughout the scriptures, we can see it here, the bitterness and the questioning that Naomi has at the beginning is not solved by somebody giving her a book and saying, "I'd like you to read why bad things happen to good people, Naomi, and I'm sure you'll make good sense of this situation." What happens instead is, without explanation, we see people's lives restored and given a new vocation. People's lives are restored and given a new purpose. And so this story begins with Naomi in bitterness and fear and resentment and hopelessness, and it ends with her holding her new grandson in her arms. And it's not like God ever explains what happens. He just continually offers the possibility of writing straight with our broken lines, of restoration and of new life, even in the most desperate and traumatic of circumstances. I love what the risen Christ says in the Gospel of John. Maybe says it more than once. And that is, "Behold, I make all things new." He doesn't say, "I'd like to explain to you the evil that's happened in the world in the last 2,000 years. He goes, "No, behold, I'd make all things new." So All Saints is about the lives of ordinary saints who will never have churches named after them, presumably. But it is about how God is active in the lives of us ordinary people in difficult, traumatic circumstances, with often unexpected restoration and grace in the midst of pain and uncertainty. The Lord saying to us again and again, as he says in Isaiah, "Behold, I do a new thing." So during this last week, we can think of examples of people whose lives that have been very difficult, that we have seen experience elements of restoration, and we can look for those. We can look for those moments of almost unwanted, but certainly unexpected grace in what are apparently hopeless situation. "Behold, I make all things new." Amen.